What is woman? A woman, as we've already said, is, in contrast to a man, a human being who does not work. One might leave it at that, for there isn't much more to say about her were the basic concept of human being not so general and inexact in embracing both man and woman. Life offers the human being two choices: animal existence, a lower order of life, and spiritual existence. In general, a woman will choose the former and opt for physical well-being, a place to breed, and an opportunity to indulge unhindered in her breeding habits. At birth, men and women have the same intellectual potential. There is no primary difference in intelligence between the sexes. It is also a fact that potential left to stagnate will atrophy. Women do not use their mental capacity, they deliberately let it disintegrate. After a few years of sporadic training, they revert to a state of irreversible mental torpor. Why do women not make use of their intellectual potential? For the simple reason that they do not need to. It is not essential for their survival. Theoretically, it is possible for a beautiful woman to have less intelligence than a chimpanzee and still be considered an acceptable member of society. By the age of 12, at the latest, most women have decided to become prostitutes. Or, to put it another way, they have planned a future for themselves which consists of choosing a man and letting him do all the work. In return for his support, they are prepared to let him make use of their vagina at certain given moments. The minute a woman has made this decision, she ceases to develop her mind. She may, of course, go on to obtain various degrees and diplomas. These increase her market value in the eyes of men, for men believe that a woman who can recite things by heart must also know and understand them. But any real possibility of communication between the sexes ceases at this point. Their paths are divided forever. One of man's worst mistakes, and one he makes over and over again, is to assume that a woman is his equal. That is, a human being of equal mental and emotional capacity. A man may observe his wife, listen to her, judge her feelings by her reactions, but in all this, be judging her only by outward symptoms, for he is using his own scale of values. He knows what he would say, think, and do if he were in her shoes. When he looks at her depressing ways of doing things, he assumes there must be something that prevents her from doing what he himself would have done in her position. This is natural, as he considers himself the measure of all things, and rightly so, if humans define themselves as beings capable of abstract thought. When a man sees a woman spending hours cooking, washing dishes, and cleaning, it never occurs to him that such jobs probably make her quite happy, since they are exactly at her mental level. Instead, he assumes that this drudgery prevents her from doing all those things which he himself considers worthwhile and desirable. Therefore, he invents automatic dishwashers, vacuum cleaners, and pre-cooked foods to make her life easier, and to allow her to lead the dream life he himself longs for. But he will be disappointed, rarely using the time she has gained to take an active interest in history, politics, or astrophysics. Woman bakes cakes, irons underclothes, and makes ruffles and frills for blouses, or, if she is especially enterprising, covers her bathroom with flower decals. It is natural, therefore, that man assumes such things to be the essential ingredients of gracious living. This idea must have been instilled by woman, as he himself really doesn't mind if his cakes are store-bought, his underpants unironed, or his bathroom devoid of flowery patterns. He invents cake mixes to liberate her from drudgery, automatic irons, and toilet paper holders already covered with the flower patterns to make gracious living easier to attain. And still, women take no interest in serious literature, politics, or the conquest of the universe. For her, this newfound leisure comes at just the right moment. At last, she can take an interest in herself. Since a longing after intellectual achievements is alien to her, she concentrates on her external appearance. Yet even this preoccupation is acceptable to man. He really loves his wife and wants her happiness more than anything in the world. Therefore, he produces non-smear lipstick, waterproof mascara, home permanence, no iron frilly blouses, and throwaway underwear, always with the same aim in view. In the end, he hopes, this being whose needs seem to him so much more sensitive, so much more refined, will gain freedom. Freedom to achieve in her life the ideal state which is his dream, to live the life of a free man. Then he sits back and waits. Finally, as woman does not come to him of her own free will, he tries to tempt her into his world. He offers her co-education so that she is accustomed to his way of life from childhood. With all sorts of excuses, he gets her to attend his universities and initiates her into the mysteries of his own discoveries, hoping to awaken her interest in the wonders of life. He gives her access to the very last male strongholds, thereby relinquishing traditions sacred to him by encouraging her to make use of her right to vote in the hope that she will change the systems of government he has managed to think up so laboriously, according to her own ideas. Possibly, he even hopes that she will be able to create peace in the world, for in his opinion, women are a pacifist influence. In all this, he is so determined and pig-headed that he fails to see what a fool he is making of himself. Ridiculous by his own standards, not those of women, who have absolutely no sense of humor. No, women do not laugh at men. At most, they get irritated. The old institutions of house and home are not yet so obviously outdated and derelict that they can't justify relinquishing all their intellectual pursuits and renouncing all their claims to better jobs. One does wonder, however, what will happen when the housework is still further mechanized, when there are enough good nursery schools nearby, or when, as must occur before long, men discover that children themselves are not essential. If only man would stop for one moment in his heedless rush toward progress and think about this state of affairs, he would immediately realize that his efforts to give woman a sense of mental stimulation have been totally in vain. It is true that woman gets progressively more elegant, more well-groomed, more cultured, but her demands on life will always be material, never intellectual. Has she ever made use of the mental processes he teaches at his universities to develop her own theories? Does she do independent research in the institutes he has thrown open to her? Someday it will dawn on man that woman does not read the wonderful books with which he has filled his libraries, and though she may well admire his marvelous works of art in museums, she herself will rarely create, only copy. Even plays and films, visual exhortations to woman on her own level to liberate herself, are judged only by their entertainment value. They will never be a first step to revolution. When a man, believing woman his equal, realizes the futility of her way of life, he naturally tends to think that it must be his fault, that he must be suppressing her. But in our time, women are no longer subject to the will of men. Quite the contrary, they have been given every opportunity to win their independence, and if, after all this time, they have not liberated themselves and thrown off their shackles, we can only arrive at one conclusion. There are no shackles to throw off. It is true that men love women, but they also despise them. Anyone who gets up in the morning fresh and ready to conquer new worlds, with infrequent success, admittedly because he has to earn a living, is bound to despise someone who simply isn't interested in such pursuits. Contempt may even be one of the main reasons for his efforts to further the mental development of a woman. He feels ashamed of her and assumes that she, too, must be ashamed of herself. So, being a gentleman, he tries to help. Men seem incapable of realizing that women entirely lack ambition desire for knowledge, and need to prove themselves, all things which to him are a matter of course. They allow men to live in a world apart because they do not want to join them. Why should they? The sort of independence men have means nothing to women, because women don't feel dependent. They are not even embarrassed by the intellectual superiority of men because they have no ambition in that direction. There is one great advantage which women have over men. They have a choice. A choice between the life of a man and the life of a dim-witted, parasitic luxury item. There are too few women who would not select the latter. Men do not have this choice. If women really felt oppressed by men, they would have developed hate and fear for them, as the oppressed always do. But women do not fear men, much less hate them. If they really felt humiliated by men's mental superiority, they would have used every means in their power to change the situation. If women really felt unfree, surely at such a favorable time in their history, they would have broken free of their oppressors. In Switzerland, one of the most highly developed countries of the world, where women until recently were not allowed to vote, in a certain canton, it is reported the majority of women were against introducing the vote for women. The Swiss men were shattered, for they saw in this unworthy attitude yet another proof of centuries of male oppression. How very wrong they were! Women feel anything but oppressed by men. On the contrary, one of the many depressing truths about the relationship between the sexes is simply that man hardly exists in a woman's world. Man is not even powerful enough to revolt against. Woman's dependence on him is only material, of a physical nature, something like a tourist's dependence on an airline, a cafe proprietor's on his espresso machine, a car's on gasoline, a television set's on electric current. Such dependencies hardly involve agonizing. Ibsen, who suffered from the same misapprehensions as other men, meant his Doll's House to be a kind of manifesto for the freedom of women. The premiere in 1880 certainly shocked men, and they determined to fight harder to improve women's position. For women themselves, however, the struggle for emancipation, as usual, took shape in a change of style. For a while, they delighted in their often laughed-at masquerade as suffragettes. Later on, the philosophy of Sartre made a similarly profound impression on women. As proof that they understood it completely, they let their hair grow down to their waists and wore black pullovers and trousers. Even the teachings of the Chinese communist leader Mao Zedong were a success. The Mao look lasted for a whole season.